Hey everybody, and welcome back to the EV Cafe Takeaway, that podcast focused on a zero emission future. Yep, and every week we get wonderful people along, and this week we have the wonderful innovator, pioneer, collaborator, that is Anne Snelson. Anne, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here. And thank you very, very much for my award last year. Complete surprise to me, but amazing to get. Thank you.
Well, I mean, my goodness, starting with just setting out the bar of the person that is Anne Snelson. Absolutely. And we'll get into why we awarded you that and the general warm feeling that there is when Anne Snelson is mentioned in the room. But I'm always joined by one of the team, and I'm ably assisted today by the lovely John Curtis.
Welcome, I wouldn't miss this for the world, even because you're here. I still want to do it because it's Anne Snelson. Come on!
I have to say there was a small fight as to, you know, elbows out, and we all want to be in this room, but no, it's just me and JC. So, Anne, welcome. And as you mentioned, you've founded a business called Lean with Sustainability, and so sustainability is your heart. But that it wasn't always so, was it? In the sense that it might have been for a long time, but I know that you've done some courses recently or the last few years, and built that up. But you began your career in marketing that's at least how it seems. So talk us through how you got this far, and you know. Yeah.
I've zigzagged around quite a lot, I think, like most people. I didn't necessarily fall straight into what I wanted to do. I actually started life as a government statistician, if I'm honest, back in the late 1980s, working for MAF, which is now DEFRA. And I fairly quickly realised that counting chickens before they'd hatched and sheep and things like that wasn't really my thing. So I then became a policy researcher for the AA. And that was early 1990s. Amusingly, I looked at one project there, which was road pricing. So 30 years on, it's finally coming to fruition. I was also trying to get motorists out. Sorry.
Well, it's her fault, everybody.
We thought it wouldn't work then, and there's still the same problems. Anyway, never mind. I was also looking at car sharing. I actually got on radio for today's programme talking about car sharing, which I did for like 18 months, 2 years. And that was one of my projects too. People with disabilities and the problems that they have motoring. So motability type stuff, which was brilliant as well. And getting people out of cars and onto bicycles, which of course is, again, something that I now am trying to do 30 years on. After that, yes, I got into marketing. So went to work for Vodafone. I was a senior manager there for about 9 years. When I had children, I sort of took a little bit of time out, not very much, and then went to work for Ringo, which was started by a friend of mine who I knew at the AA, and was literally employee number 15, the only person doing marketing. And I was there for 13 years. So I grew that from the sort of less than 10 local authorities that we had then to the 150 or so it has today. And amusingly, at Ringo, I probably did the biggest thing that I will ever do for sustainability, which was to support what's called emissions-based parking. And if you go and park in London, you'll find that you are charged more for parking a diesel or petrol car than you are for an electric vehicle in many instances. And interestingly, in Islington, at one stage, and they've now gone to charging EVs as well, it would cost you over £50, 50, to park a diesel for 4 hours. It would cost you 20 pence for an electric vehicle. So how brilliant was that? quite an incentive to move. And Westminster City Council estimated that they had reduced journeys by 250,000, so a quarter of a million each year, just through emissions-based parking. So I think all of the beautiful London air quality, and it's partly because of me. So that was a brilliant service, but I was then starting to be more conscious of climate change. And amusingly, I told my daughter, Katie, who was then 16, that she and her brother, Tommy, would have to sort climate change. And she just looked at me and said, well, what are you doing, Mum? You're not exactly past it. And I thought, Good point. So that was really what started me on my journey away from Ringo and towards more sustainable things. I then spent a year with CoCharger, electric vehicle neighbourhood charging. It was quite early to market stage there. And most people, of course, who could afford an EV at that stage could probably afford a charger too. And I was sort of after a year, 15 months there, I actually did carbon literacy project training myself, and was so blown away by it that I decided that I wanted to set up my own business. And that's what I did with Leaders Sustainability, and I became a trainer myself. And I love doing the training. It is just brilliant to do and see how it changes people in the same way that it changed me.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europcar, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europcar's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europcar. Search Europcar Business.
I will ask that because Caroline has done, and the Caroline, for those of you that don't know, and have been clearly under a rock, my wife, she's done your course, hasn't she?
She has, yes. She was quite early on, so probably a couple of years ago now. And I think she enjoyed it. Certainly, I think she and there's quite a few others in the group. JC's done it as well.
Oh, yes. And it was brilliant, utterly brilliant. And the thing is, I've been in this area for, I don't know, 15 more years. And I learned so much. And I remembered so much of the things which get lost in the mists of time, the reasons why you care. And what you were able to do is to not only reinforce the new stuff, the latest stuff that's coming out, but you're able to find those nuggets that are the emotional attachment that people have, the reasons why they care. It's just a superb course. Goodness gracious, you've been around sustainability more than most of us. Why do you care?
Oh, gosh. Well, it's kind of interesting. I think one of your questions was, you know, what influenced me to get into this? And amusingly, my parents, I mean, my father was a statistician, so that's where I started out in that. But they always brought me up. So I was in Scotland, a beautiful countryside. My mother was actually an ecologist. And it's interesting, I've just cleared out their house recently following the death of my mother. And the number of things I've found, you know, articles from 1988 where they've talked about climate change, about the problems of migration and things like that, on the back of, you know, unbearable heat and things like that. So I think it just has been in the background my whole life. And I suppose maybe it takes age before we realise quite how important it is. And yes, you know, my children, I don't really want them to have a world to grow up even more. They're grown young adults now. But I don't want them to be experiencing what they're probably going to experience unless we do drive dramatic change. So they're a big motivation to me. And then many times when I go and train, I was training the executive team at BMW in November, and I just asked them to put up their hands about how many of them had children, because they were similar ages to me, and virtually the whole room did. And it is just when you start to think about that, the impact it's going to have on people, that's really, you know, why I do it, because it's important.
Now, Anne, I've got huge respect for you. I didn't know that you were a statistician, but that suggests that you're darn good with numbers, and I am utterly useless with numbers. Is that something that you were just naturally gifted with, your father being a statistician, your mother an ecologist, both of whom will have had to work with numbers? Is it just natural to you, or did you work hard at it?
I think that was the problem. It's natural for my father. It was natural for my brother. I was okay at it. But when you're okay at something, doing a degree and then becoming a statistician, it's probably a little bit too much. I do like numbers. I like using data. I try and weave that through my course because I think that demonstrates things that just talking about, you know, climate change and what's happening doesn't really do. So, you know, the fact that I love is that for every degree of warming, the atmosphere will hold 7% more water. So we're at 1.5 degrees centigrade now. And so the atmosphere is basically holding over 10% more water than it used to, which is why we get these enormous periods of drought, exactly, and then big rainfalls. And, you know, and people just don't think about that and don't make that tie up. So, you know, they may see it flooding out there at the moment, but they don't think about why that's happening. So, yes, I use numbers. I like the odd spreadsheet, you know, but, yeah, most of the time I like a balance, of talking and writing and marketing, of course, was quite a lot about those sorts of things too.
Well, being a fellow marketeer, I've just had an idea, as you do.
Oh, and I'm thinking, look out, everybody.
Well, hang on a sec. Climate change countdown. So you could be our Carol Vorderman and we could do letters and numbers, because you like both letters and numbers. And so we could have a, you know, a P, please, Bob, and so on. We could get all that stuff in. Work out climate change
different program.
I know. But, you know, climate change related words in one round. And then we could do the numbers round where Anne would really come into her own. I think this has got legs, mate. Climate change countdown.
Fabulous. I mean, I just put in the EB Cafe news this morning, you know, things like new vehicle sales in Nepal, of all places, 70% of all vehicles there. So I love those sorts of figures. Yeah, we could do it. Absolutely.
Well, how did I miss that comment? 70% of all vehicles in Nepal. Norway, yes, I know, we're like 90-odd%. Nepal?
Nepal. The other one is Ethiopia, where they are banning imports of fossil fuel cars. Banned them. They're only doing electric vehicle imports. Because they've got hydroelectric power there and they don't want to give away that advantage. So, yeah, amazing examples from around the world. Anyway, that wasn't a number, but you get the idea.
But this is, I think this is, you really hit on something, because what we discovered this morning, and we interviewed Caroline Watson a few weeks ago from C40, and C40 is 40 different cities all around the globe, and their mayors all collaborating together to kind of communicate what's good in one country to what's good in another, and how buses have sort of progressed from, you know, doing very, very well in London and in Glasgow and different places, electric buses. And then suddenly Singapore and there was a few other names in there that I can't remember. But it was just incredible how this technology is, you know, being embraced by many other countries, and we're still fighting over it. But anyway, sustainable countdown. What did you call it, John?
Climate change countdown.
That's it. Climate change
We've
countdown.
We've got to do it, mate. We've got to do it. Let's set up a webinar just with climate change countdown. We can have a couple of contestants. I can see it now. It's going to be all, oh, I'm frothing.
Anne, have we got you? Can we book you for that?
I'll get my Carol Vorderman outfit. Maybe not.
Happy days.
I have to get one online.
You can borrow mine. Anyway,
do some exercise.
Well, that sounds great. And we should have like a bonus point for a particularly like good climate word or a good climate number. Arriving at numbers. It is genius, John. You do have, I mean, that is your good idea of the year all used up. But, you know, it's good. It's good.
Oh, dear.
But Anne, listen, what I have been so impressed about is that you have just kind of gone quietly about getting on with delivering this course, and the level of change and value that it brings, I think, both at an individual level, but thrilled to hear that, you know, corporations like BMW, and BMW are doing some good stuff, by the way. You know, there's some really good electric cars out there. Answering the question, because, you know, they're not boring. Yeah, they're quite, you know, forward thinking. Some of them are really sexy, typical BMW cars. You know, is it the i4 or the iM4? I don't know. Anyway, there's all kinds of good stuff, isn't there? But the corporation is really embracing it as well as a whole. Talk to us about just kind of some of the highlights that have been for you over the last 3 years doing this.
Yeah, I mean, I love what BMW doing, and hats off to Jazz saying that because he's been doing amazing things. And he's another one that just works quietly in the background. He's doing scope 3 emissions, not just scope 1 and scope 2. So he's sort of eating away at the big things there. They've done some things like putting the embedded emissions of each of their vehicles on the app as well. So you can actually compare what the embodied carbon emissions are of electric vehicles versus ICE vehicles. So, you know, combating things like people saying, batteries, et cetera, make it electric vehicles worse than ICE vehicles. So the stats are all there. He has obviously, rolled out carbon literacy project training. It's also with Alphabet as well. So I'm working with Natasha Foley there of Alphabet, and she's actually the one that got the exec team to do it. And I think they're likely to even be rolling it out across Europe as well. So really embracing it at all levels. And it is a driving force there. And, in many ways, then I find it quite hard when, dare I say, the government sort of penalizes things like battery emissions that are made in China. BMW has actually insisted with their manufacturer in China that they only use renewable energy. There is no coal-powered manufacturing there in their factory at all. And, and it's that sort of level of detail that you think, they are doing their utmost to decarbonize things. They're putting solar panels on warehouses and things like this. And you sort of think that should be recognized by government if possible. So things like, the electric vehicle grant that they brought out in the summer, there's only a few models which actually get that. And it does feel sometimes a little bit unfair when you see companies like that who are doing so much. They're also they brought out the Neue Klasse. And about a third of that is recycled materials, which is amazing, isn't it? I kind of wanted that to be the headline, but they went into all the other details. But, so thinking about that whole circularity piece, and I know, JC, you're quite circularity as well. So it's like, how can we reuse resources so that it's as efficient as possible and we don't waste materials. So they're doing so much, and really hats off to them. I also did a fair bit with Nissan. So that was kind of interesting, their AMEA region. So, I had people in Australia attending, which was a little late for them, but it just shows how keen people are on learning more about sustainability, about climate change, and about what's happening. And some of those were really quite emotional to me. I had people on from India and places where, they're seeing flooding like we just can't imagine. And they're seeing the impact of it, wiping away complete villages and things. I don't know. It is really just amazing to be working with companies like that and to be seeing the impact that it has on their employees too. I had one, bless him, who said that it was the best course virtually that he'd done in 33 years of working at Nissan. So it's lovely to get that sort of feedback too.
Oh, it is, isn't it? And I think you've raised such an important point because, JC, it's easy really to get caught up in vehicles, isn't it? We think about cars, and well, some people think about cars. No car ever goes through this brain, let me tell you. We think about vans, we think about trucks, we think about aviation and maritime, and we think about all kinds of things. We don't actually think so much, I don't think, about the broader sustainability, about everything that we do, and I'm certainly guilty of that. And you raised something about circularity, and I was really thrilled. Company I work with, Clayton Power, talked to me about how their devices, they create sort of battery stuff to support work out of commercial vehicles. And I was in their factory where they're taking bits off of the old units that have come back for warranty reasons or that they've just been replaced. And they're reusing some of the circuitry and some of the copper wiring and, where it's reasonable to do so. And they save a tiny amount of money, but they save a heck of a lot of resource when they're using it. And it's this thinking, to your point about the vehicle that you mentioned from BMW there, kind of lots of elements of recycling the materials. Do you think we're missing a trick on this whole circularity piece? And how can we add to that conversation?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it will become more important. I mean, yes, it's great that Nissan Leaf batteries are used in houses sometimes, you know, for their solar batteries and things like that. But there is still going to be quite an interesting discussion, particularly as, you know, dare I say, electric vehicle batteries. And if you're talking about batteries in vans and HGVs and things like that, they're pretty big. So I know the solutions will be smaller, maybe, you know, where they're going to be, you can take out a little bit if one bit of it doesn't work and slot it in for another one. And you'll be able to break those down a lot more. But at the moment, I think not all the manufacturers are thinking about that sort of thing. So we just need to get cleverer. And I think, you know, this is where, dare I say, the positive side of AI can come in, that we can start working on better solutions. So, you know, we're already using AI, for instance, for things like coming up with battery composition, taking millions of different opportunities and options and working out which are the ones, maybe bringing it down to, say, 100 or so, and which are the best ones to then test. And that's the positive side of AI, and we should be doing more about that. But just that thinking about how else can we use materials that are already there? And there's some lovely case studies around Africa. They've got women who, dare I say, single mums and things like that, who are going around collecting tire waste from the side of the roads. And they're then using that in road construction. I had someone on my course yesterday who was talking about using plastic bottles in tarmac, and it actually strengthens the tarmac as well. So, you know, you get your potholes, and rather than seeing a plastic bottle floating around in it, it'll actually be made into pellets and things like that. And yes, you know, I think we should be thinking about our resources. There's so one of the things I talk about in the course is Earth Overshoot Day, and apparently the richest 1.5% have already blown it. I think they blew it on about day 10 of the year. That's what Oxfam say. But even for the world as a whole, you know, it's the middle of August. We're using up resources at 1.7 times what the earth can regenerate. And even people in Nigeria, you know, their Earth Overshoot Day is about November. So we just need to start getting cleverer about what we do and what we can use. And I don't think I'm breaking any promises, but one of my best actions from yesterday, Tuesday, it was the automotive course, he was actually thinking about how could they recycle more plastic from cars and reuse that. And that to me is an amazing thing. And that's what I mean, that the course actually drives real change, because every individual just looks at what they do and how can they impact it and what are the best things they can do. So those are the sorts of things that I love coming out of it.
Do you know what? You just fill me with joy, Em. And it's not about what you know, because what you know is known by lots of people. There's something about you that makes this whole subject really engaging. I've found over the years that there's a lot of people who just want to switch off from sustainability, and they just say, oh, it's not for me, don't care, whatever, and they just do their thing. But every single person I've ever seen you interact with gets it. You've got this incredible ability to make things really simple and listenable and understandable. Have you always had that, or have you had to work hard at that to become the trainer that you are?
Oh, thank you, JC. That's really, really kind of you. I don't know. Maybe when you asked before if I was a natural statistician, I really don't think so. But I think I had two educators as parents. I mean, my dad was a professor of statistics for 50 years. He still is. He's an emeritus professor. So he obviously lectured. And my mother was a lecturer as well. She used to do tour guides around Scotland on buses and things like that. So that was her sort of job. And she did some lecturing at university. So maybe I got it from them. I don't know. But it isn't something that I particularly thought about. I just, you know, I am enthusiastic about it. So I like passing on that enthusiasm to others. The interactive days that I have, that's what's lovely about them, actually. It's not just me talking. I learn something every time we have a course, because it's the people who are there and they all know about their area. So, you know, I find it fascinating because I learn every single time as well. So, yeah, it's It's a brilliant day. You know, it's not like, well, some people would describe it as a GCSE in climate change. And it is, because it gives you that. I was one of my lovely trainees. I was like, oh, okay, quite a lot of content here. But it is, it's these sort of group dynamics as well. And sometimes I just have amazing people. I had quite a senior leader from a major, you'll be pleased with this one, Paul, HGV distribution company on Tuesday. Yes, absolutely. And he's doing amazing things as well. You know, he's part of the government's rollout plan for HGV charging. He's doing his bit there. He's trying to see how many very, very expensive electric tractors, tractor units he can purchase, and thinking about alternative fuels for the rest. So, you know, that's what I love. I love hearing about the positive news stories. And it is what I love about the EV Cafe as well, that you share them too. You know, your news this morning about, the Voltempo network rolling out was amazing. And we just need to be sharing those and getting everybody on board. Because I think, particularly in, dare I say, today's climate, with things happening around the world, people stop talking about it quite so much. And that just feels like a real shame. Share these good news stories. And maybe that's one of the problems for the larger companies like BMW as well. They're a bit scared of being accused of greenwashing. And I think that's just such a shame, because they then what's called green hush and don't talk about it at all. So a big applause to you for all that you do, and just keep doing it even more if possible.
Well, we're not going to give up anytime soon, that's for sure.
You've mentioned a couple of times, Anne, your parents, and clearly they've had a big part to play in your life. Would you say that they're your biggest influence, or is there somebody else, something else which has really shaped you?
It's amusing. You sort of gave me this question to begin with, and I had put that my parents were, but I've talked about them quite a lot. The other person who actually influenced me on my journey, Josie, is you.
No.
If you recall, quite a long time back, was it 2018, 2019?
Ringo.
When I was first trying to get into this at Ringo, I came up with a proposition, I mean, which they were kind of dabbling with, which was, and I still think it's really important, is to think about how do we park and pay for parking in like public car parks and pay for charging. And the sensible thing would be to put the two together, in my opinion, anyway. And I know that was probably very simplistic at the time. But I then went online, I sort of Googled, you know, who can I talk to about EV charging? And I got hold of Sarah first. So she was very kindly, she was working in Bristol and the solicitor's company then. And she said, I should probably talk to you. And you flew down from Falkirk to come and talk to me and some colleagues at Ringo. And I was just, again, blown away, so impressed that anyone should care so passionately about this industry that they would just drop everything and come and talk to us. And I always felt quite bad that I didn't then manage to get that project through. But that was one of the reasons I left and started doing what I'm doing now. So in many ways, you know, I have to thank you for that too. There you go.
I didn't expect that. Thank you. Paul, quick, help me.
Well, I'm not going to help you. I'm just going to say, oh, that's lovely. Honestly, because I think what we all have to appreciate is that we leave our mark. And every now and again, you spot the mark in someone else. And it's lovely to see this interaction, because, and what's so clear is that, you know, John has talked about your course, Caroline has talked about your course, and anybody that I've met has been on your course. And John referred to that warmth that I get the sense of whenever I'm near you or with you. There is that warmth that just comes across that makes you so approachable. And it's sort of it feels like an empathy. It feels like you just get people. And what I'm also aware of is that often there are things that really shape us when that's there. There's a warmth and appreciation and empathy. What is it that shaped you? What are the things that have been challenging that you've gone through and come through and enable you to just be on everybody else's wavelength and appreciate them as they are?
Gosh, quite a lot in my life, I suppose. And maybe that's it, that, you know, when you go through quite hard times and you get through them, it gives you resilience. I mean, gosh, everything from, yes, being made redundant, which more and more people are experiencing, to losing some children. I mean, not before they were born, but miscarriage is quite a big one that people don't talk about. Yeah. And you're just supposed to continue. And for women in particularly, that can be devastating. Yeah. Divorce, that wasn't great either, but got through that. But most recently, my mother died 20 months ago. She fell down the stairs. So it was very, very sudden.
Sorry.
Very sudden.
Yeah.
She's up in Scotland. And that was just unutterably horrendous. You know, you just can't imagine it. And dealing with that. And what's interesting, is that, you know, I have been basically divorced, separated on my own for 10 years. And a month before this happened with my mother, I met my lovely partner, Tim Rolt-Smith. And he's in the EV world. And he was just in a situation where he could help me. It was 4 weeks, a month before she died. Yeah. And he actually came on my course. Not that that's the way that I pick people up, I promise. he actually approached me rather than the other way around. But he supported me all the way through that.
Yeah.
And I just don't know how I would have coped otherwise, because just so strange.
Wow.
So in some ways, I think the people that you need come into your life at the right time.
It's so
sometimes
true.
Very strange.
So true.
I think I remember that all happening, actually. I think it was around the time of the Octopus event. I remember right?
Could have been. June 23.
I do seem to remember that. And thank you for sharing that. And because I think I put a post out, you know, because I understand that kind of loss and of children and stuff. And I think I know that my girls stand with me through the, you know, even though they were lost before they were born. And they form us, they do make such a significant impact on our character. And I really think that comes through for you. And also that resilience has built up and built up. And I get that sense that you just are going to and are leaving your mark and making a difference. And it's just so good to see. What are you looking forward to most over the next sort of 3 to 5 years?
Oh, gosh. Just building the business as much as I can and sharing it with more people. I mean, that is what I love doing. It's kind of, yes, my purpose, I've finally found it, you know, at the lovely age of 59. Really just trying to spread it out even more. I do built environment as well. So I sort of cover the two main sectors. You know, transport is 30% of UK domestic emissions, buildings and construction. If you add the two together, it's 39%, but both of them are about 20%, a bit less. So these are the areas that we have to decarbonize. And it's vitally important. These next 10 years are going to be so crucial. So just spreading that message, getting more people to understand that, you know, trying to counteract some of those myths, which drive me potty. When you say I'm empathetic, I'm really not. When I'm faced with a climate denier, I find that one really difficult. When someone says, doesn't exist, I'm like... trying to, and hopefully seeing another wave in positivity, because we do go through these peaks and troughs. I think Glasgow COP26 was, a major plus for the UK, and we sort of were riding that wave. And now it does feel quite hard. I actually quite like what Ed Miliband's doing. I think he's doing his best, mostly. I think he does understand the urgency of what we need to do. So it's quite nice to have someone senior in government actually doing that. It will be interesting to see where we go because, there are a lot of, dare I say, people with potential power who might not do the right thing at all. So I think we do need to be thinking about that too.
And I agree with you, Anne. It's something which has struck me greatly that politics is a very necessary part of what we do, but it's also a very frustrating part of what we do because it can have huge public sway and can help to form opinions which are ill-informed. That you see a headline, you hear a soundbite, and suddenly the person who was almost on the edge of doing the right thing doesn't. How do you cope with those people who do knock you back and say, do you know what, Anne, I'm really, really glad that you're happy about doing all your sustainability stuff, but it's not for me. Is it just one of those, okay, I'll move on to the next one because there will be lots of people who get it? Or does that affect you deep down?
I think in normal life, you just have to, dare I say, pick your battles. And, you know, I am so used to, I had one, a conversation a couple of nights ago with someone who just said, well, you know, you can misuse data. And I was like, okay, you know, would you say that to your doctor if they told you had a life-threatening disease? These climate scientists have been working on this for decades. But hey, and I mean, amusingly, he told me that, you know, in the Thames, there used to be ice islands. And I was like, yeah, that's the point. The world is warming. But, you know, he just didn't get it. And I know perfectly well that he probably watches GB News. And he told me all about his travels around the world. And don't get me wrong, you know, I've been very lucky in my younger life to travel around the world as well. So it's very easy to, I guess, point the finger at other people. And all I see my job is doing is trying to nudge people from wherever they are a bit further along the line. And yeah, okay, you know, some people are much easier and much readier with them to hear the messages. I'm quite lucky as well, obviously, that it tends to be the people coming on my course that actually want to learn about it rather than being out and out deniers. But I've had some people who come on and kind of gone and probed me quite thoroughly about the signs, and that's good for me too, because I then go away and learn a little bit more. And you know, what about ice cores and wood rings and, you know, satellites see the side of the atmosphere and things like this, all of which go to prove what we probably knew in the late, you know, 1800s, that actually carbon dioxide does take up heat, you know. So there's all these sorts of things, and it is just working out where each person is, what interests them, you know, what is going to resonate with them. And many of the things that I talk about are actually better. We were talking about mental health. You know, I had one procurement director who said, I flew 80 times last year. I'm not going to do that anymore. And you kind of think, that can't be a great life, can it? You know, 80 flights a year. And in many ways, I was giving him the excuse to go to his employer and go, I'm going to do more face-to-face. You know, I'm going to do less face-to-face meetings. I'm going to do more virtual. I don't need to travel this far. That would be saving his mental health. It'd be saving the company costs, you know. And yes, of course, it's having a major impact on emissions. But there are all sorts of benefits to this too. It's not just, you know, some esoteric thing that's going to happen over time. There are major, what we call co-benefits as well, where that will help people, you know, just live better lives and feel happier.
It's amazing. And I'm so glad that you set up a business. And, you know, you and I have something in common in that we set up a business in our 50s. And the question for me is, what would you say to somebody that is thinking about, like, launching their own venture? Because it takes, as the Spanish say, some cojones. So, you know, it takes a little bit of gumption to go and do it. And, you know, it's either brave or daft or a bit of both. What would you say to somebody?
Gosh, a little bit of gumption. I have to say, it's one of the things I'm most proud of, but also possibly the stupidest thing I've done either. You know, it is not easy. You know, I was a marketeer. Fine. I wasn't a salesperson. I've had to become quite a good salesperson. And I'm learning about that over time as well. You have to become your bookkeeper, you know, not quite your accountant, because hopefully you give it to somebody else. You have to do all of these things that you've never done before, you know, companies, house, tax returns for your business, et cetera, et cetera. But it does give you such a sense of achievement, doesn't it? Something that you built, something that you're proud of. I'm certainly not doing it, dare I say, for the money. It's far easier. I mean, the worst thing actually about my mum dying was that I was doing a sort of side contract as well. And I just thought, you know, if I was fully employed by somebody else, I would be getting bereavement leave here. Rather than trying to sort her funeral and everything else, you know, while juggling work, I did do training as well, which possibly, actually, I don't think it was a bad idea because Ash Bannister, BMW, came on the one just after she had died. And bless him, he was probably the main reason that I got the BMW work. So as again, you know, sometimes karma works out right. And, you know, when you put that effort in, you do get so much back. And I think that's the thing, the sort of message I would give, you know, the more you give out, certainly for me, the more you get back. So, yes, setting up your own business is not easy. I think maybe doing it in your 50s, once you've had your sort of like set life of working for other people, you've got experience then, you've got some resilience, you kind of know that you can work your way around most things. And I still constantly think, you know, is this the right thing to be doing? Should I be doing other things? Should I be doing more marketing? I'm now just purely doing the training. And that was the other thing, that I did it in a sort of phased basis. So when I first started off, I really panicked because I, you know, didn't see how I was going to get, you know, any money at all. So I then did sort of marketing contracting, and I was doing, I started off doing 2 days a week, and then they sort of very quickly said, oh, could you do 4 days? So I'm like, okay, not much time for my business. And then that was a sort of like 9 month contract, and I did my training and things in between times and started to build it up. And then marketing contracts went to 3 days, and then it went down to 2 days, and now I'm down to not doing it at all. So if you can, if you're like me, I'm quite risk averse, doing it in that sort of phased way rather than going, yep, I'm going to stop everything and just set up my own business, is really, I would suggest, quite a good route. And dare I say, particularly in today's market when people are finding it quite hard, there's quite a lot of, you know, people being made redundant, sadly. It is quite hard at the moment with the cost of living crisis and businesses looking at their costs and things like that to actually start up work. I mean, if you've got good networks and good contacts, you've worked in lots of different places, then, I mean, what I would suggest is, you know, working with those companies, because that really, really helps and just eases you in. But at some point, every business has to break out of that original network and those original referrals and sort of step out on their own. And that's the hard bit, isn't it? I mean, you know that more than me.
What strikes me about you, Anne, is I've done a lot of these podcasts with Paul, 150 or so, and invariably we come across a type of person who's driven, enthusiastic, passionate, a big ego, and they make stuff happen because they just give it the beans. And you are the complete counterpoint to that. You're calm, you're measured, you're fact-based. You're so, so different. And I always ask those people who are manic like me, how do you relax? How do you have the time to relax? I'm going to flip that completely on its head. Do you ever get mad about stuff, really lose the plot and just bang the table?
Ask Tim. All the time.
Let me just get him on the phone.
Yeah, I love this. Totally. That's a fabulous. Thank you so much. That is, I lose the plot all the time. I don't know if you've done the chimp paradox, Steve Peters.
Oh, yes.
I have such a strong chimp. Yeah, and it comes out all the time. So really.
So what are you, fight, flight or freeze?
Oh, gosh. Probably fight. Sometimes freeze. Sometimes freeze. Just go, I don't often run away. I'll usually react too quickly, actually, is half the problem, and then go, oh my God, what did you do that for? So, the human kicks in and goes, you let him on again, you know, the chimp. My little girly chimp or whatever. So it is. I mean, I am quite driven as well. And yes, relaxing is tricky. I tend to do, I've got a dog who's brilliant. So my little cockapoo Sky, named after the island, of course. And so he makes me go out. I run. So running is always good. And if things are hard, going for a run, it gives you great ideas as well. Gets you out in nature, you know. So I love doing that. I don't take a whole lot of time off, I must admit. And that's something that Tim's quite good at getting me to do more of. We have just, we're recently back from a lovely EV trip all the way down to Lucca in North Italy. We went away there over New Year. We have friends who go and rent out a place in Italy each New Year for about 5 weeks, and they invite us to go and stay. So last year was actually Sicily, which we went to by EV.
Drove all the way back. EVs will never work. They'll never make the distance. They can't go a long way in an EV. This is nonsense. Hans Nelson, what nonsense you're peddling.
Well, that is what's lovely, that, you know, yes, I'm very lucky, dare I say. It's a beautiful old dirty T word. So it does make it so easy. And I kind of think I maybe ought to experience life as a normal electric vehicle driver as well and see what that's like, just to compare. But, you know, the car will tell you where you have to charge. It will, you know, say this is how long you have to stop for. That one's busy. You know, don't park in these two bays because they're not working. And you just go, this is such an amazing experience. And, you know, when people say, we have to stop and wait, I mean, in many of these places, well, apart from anything else, we rarely have to stop and wait because, you know, you stop for coffee or breakfast or lunch or whatever on these trips. We tend to, you know, try and find a hotel with charging overnight so you can start the next day. So it just takes a bit of different thinking. But, I mean, we probably spend less time waiting for it to charge than you would ever spend in a petrol station, you know, because the rest of the time, yeah, you're going to the loo, you're getting a coffee, you're having lunch. We go and see places. On the way back, we stopped in Avignon. The way down, we stopped in the Alps and saw a bit of the Alps, which was beautiful. And so much nicer than flying, and lower emissions too, of course, which is
very
the main
good.
Thing.
Well done. And I feel like you've earned this. And what this is the EV Cafe Takeaway closing tradition. It's probably not so much of a secret since we published a whole podcast on the subject of the magic wands. So let me present you with the magic wand, the EV Cafe magic wand, where you get one wish. Are you ready? You ready? Here it comes. So there you go. You can take on the... well done, well done. You've got the magic wand. What one wish would you wish for life in general, I think? I mean, you know, you don't have to be like, but what's important to you and what would you like to do?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I was thinking work-wise. I want cheap electricity. I want cheap electricity like we used to have. And I want a national grid that will cope with it all. Is that allowed? Am I allowed to? So
I think we can merge that wish, can't we? We can kind of make that one wish.
A bit of latitude.
Yeah. And of course, I would love it all to be renewable all over the country as well. So, yeah, that's my wish. And hopefully it will help us all.
I think it's not an unreasonable... I mean, you know, do we really need magic for that? I don't think we do. I think we just need a bit of common sense, don't we? Because of the way the pricing is structured and, you know, when you look around Europe, the journey that you've just done, and I'm about to drive over to Amsterdam in a couple of weeks, and I know that the cost of energy on the continent is a lot lower. So, you know, it's not actually a million miles away, is it? And not rocket science, right? It does seem to be a lot higher than it used to be. So a very reasonable wish.
Thank you.
It's been an incredible pleasure talking to you, and just really thrilled to get to know you. And also, for those people that have been under a rock and never been on your training and never met you, hopefully they'll be now thinking, do you know what? We need this Hans Nelson coming along to us and training us, because that is a bit of genius. I have not made your course yet. Maybe I ought to, because I think there's a lot of stuff that I would learn from you, you know, because, you know, it'd be outside of Vans, right? So my world is this.
You can convert everyone to Vans on the course. That's the opportunity. Yes. Absolutely.
As John, isn't it a joy?
Always, always. As Anne pointed out, I've known her for just over 7 years, and I never fail to learn something new whenever we chat. And this sense of always developing, always learning, always growing is what keeps you young, engaging, and fabulous. Anne Snelson, bless you for being my friend, and thank you for teaching me all you have. And get him on a course, because it's not expensive, Anne, is it? I mean, your course is buttons. It's quick advert.
I think I've got buttons. Hang on, I'll take them off my shirt.
Yeah, I mean, it is £125 for a person for a day. Dare I say, EV Cafe people could probably get a discount. Just mention it, okay?
Ooh, okay. Well, listen, this is going on the website. John, this is going on the website. We're putting it on the website, and we'll put it there as something that people can access a small discount. That we'll agree this offline, a small discount, because it only needs to be a small discount, if I'm being honest. That's already very good value. Very good value indeed. I think I should go on one. So you'll have to give me some dates, and I need to learn CPD and all of that good stuff.
Well, that would be nice. If you learned anything other than Vans, that'd be nice.
Yes, but I'll be able to use it in the world of Vans. That's the joy, isn't it?
Indeed.
Absolutely. So look, we've had a fabulous time, and I'm sure everybody agrees. And we have had some wonderful people on the podcast, and you just add to that wonderful list of wonderful people. You have really shone today, and I thank you for being human as well and sharing your journey and the things that, you know, we have to build resilience. Resilience doesn't just magic itself out of the air. And for being really human with us, and giving us all sympathy for Tim, because he's getting shouted at by the sounds of it from time to time.
No, I don't shout at him. I just Tim comes out and venting, letting off steam. You know, it's good for us rather than bottling it up.
I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you, definitely. And so Tim is a good sounding board. Sorry, I've made Tim. And who'd ever want to shout at Tim? Nobody. Nobody ever. Well, listen, it's been fabulous. If you want to listen to any of the other podcasts, head on over to the EV Cafe. You will find a link to connect with Anne and her course in the notes. So follow her on LinkedIn. You can find her, Anne Snelson, S-N-E-L-S-O-N. You could check her out. You could probably read that from the podcast notes. But anyway, so connect with her. It's been fabulous. We look forward to seeing you again next time. In the meantime, thank you, Anne. Thank you, John. And thank you, everybody, for joining us. Have a great day.